Well, hello. We are back again with another episode of Scientology Fair Game. We're joined by Mike Rinder.
Hi, Leah. It's great to be back again, and it's wonderful to welcome our guest this week.
Yes.
Who is someone that I have known since, 1973 or 1974, something like that.
Oh, this is going to feel so good to say this. Sorry. I was four. Go ahead.
I wasn't. Karen de la Carrier, mm-hmm. who has been a very, very good friend to me, someone who has stood by me and you, Leah, since mm-hmm. she has left the church.
Yes.
But prior to leaving, she was what's known as a Class 12 auditor.
And what does that mean?
She attained the highest level of training and expertise in the subject of Scientology that is possible under the direction of the man himself, L. Ron Hubbard. And very, very few people in the world can claim the status that she had in Scientology. And on top of that, she was also married to Heber Gentsch, who, as we all know, was the former president of the Church of Scientology International, mm-hmm. who disappeared and has been held at the Golden Era Productions property, as we talked to Tammy Clark about.
Correct.
Karen has a lot of information about Scientology, but also she has personal experiences that she has been the target of Fair Game.
Thank you, Michael. Real pleasure. Can I just throw in one thing? You know the phrase, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Yes.
Well, due to Mike Rinder, Leah Remini's unprecedented success in this podcast, Scientology is looking at doing podcasts. Did you read Tony Ortega's blog?
Yes, I saw that.
Is the sincerest form of flattery. Copying.
Yes.
Copying
yes.
you.
Yes.
Copycat.
Yes, yes. Well, listen, and we could be accused of that. You've been doing wonderful work on your own channel, if you want to talk about that, as well as your partner, Jeffrey, who has a wonderful website called the Scientology Money Project, which is amazing. But you guys also do videos, which your videos are really for the purpose. I love the reenactments because a lot of times people don't really understand what procedures go on in Scientology and reenacting these and actually showing us what actually goes down in an auditing, you know, session of Scientology, or just explaining policies in the way that you guys do. So you've been doing it before us. And the only thing that I want to clarify is because people get confused, because Karen was a Sea Org member, like you said, married to Heber Gentsch, who hasn't been seen in public in 15 years, who is at the Gold Base in Riverside County. But you guys were married, you were in the Sea Org, and this at the time, Karen, they were allowing Sea Org members, they have since stopped allowing this, to have children in the Sea Org. So you had your son, Alexander, with Heber in the Sea Org.
Yeah. Yeah. Little thing is, I dearly wanted one more child. I saw them putting on the brakes, and Heber and I had to petition. Imagine having to beg hierarchy to have a child. We attached statistics and proof of stellar production. After all, I was a Class 12 case supervisor, not just a Class 12 auditor. I supervised the class. I was senior to all the Class 12s.
And that's pretty big shit, by the way. Everybody like who's listening is like hearing these words, Class 12, senior case supervisor. Just know she was the shit in Scientology. People would call her sir. This is like, imagine wearing epaulets and the military uniform. This person and what it takes to be a Class 12 would be analogous to a bachelor's degree, Mike, wouldn't you say?
A master's, a doctor of philosophy. That is the equivalent in Scientology is a doctorate degree.
Okay.
It is the ultimate. You can't get any more. She became the professor, the lead professor of Scientology.
And I'll tell you, it was brutal to get there.
Sure.
No days off. Mm-hmm. 60 to 70 hour weeks. Burn the midnight oil. Mm-hmm. Oh God.
Sure.
What you do when you believe.
Yes.
Prison of belief.
So you had your son, Alexander, in the Sea Org. And yes. As we all know, children in the Sea Org are not raised, particularly by their parents. They're, because of the workload and what's expected of a Sea Org member, like you're saying, you're working morning, noon, and night with no time off, maybe an hour to see your child. But your child is given to a Scientology daycare. You know, and supervised by people, and this is still goes on today in a certain way, not so much with children, but with any kind of medical care for staff. These positions to take care of children and people in the Sea Org are usually 12-year-olds and people with no formal education in how to care for children or people. So your son, Alexander, was basically raised by other children.
Correct.
And other Sea Org members. And you saw him, what, an hour a day maybe, right?
Well, they cut off family time as well, so that 1 hour got cut off, and they were shipped to a ranch 2 hours outside Los Angeles.
Right.
So a two-hour journey there, 2 hours to come, 4 hours. You
just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So I only make that point so people understand, that because this is how parishioner children are raised. You usually send your child to a Scientology organization to do courses all day, and basically Scientology is raising that kid. And so that's where they get their, you know, quote-unquote formal education. And so even Scientology parents who are not in the Sea Org don't raise their children. But go ahead. So you were in the Sea Org now, a highly decorated Sea Org member, for how long? 20-something years.
Almost 20 years.
Yeah. Right.
I left in 1990.
Okay.
But Alexander was now a Sea Org member. And I stayed in the being a good girl, a good Scientologist, for another 20 years.
So meaning, just to clarify, so you left the Sea Organization,
1990.
Right? 1990. So, correct. However, you remained a Scientologist. Yes.
2010.
And you abided by the policies of Scientology, which is not to speak out or say anything disparaging about Scientology, because if you had, you would have risked knowing your son.
Right. They would have cut him off from me. In the end, they did. They did exactly what I dreaded.
But, sure. Mm-hmm. So in 2010, what happened?
Well, I came out on Marty's blog.
Marty Rathbun, another former... So Marty Rathbun, everybody, just to remind you, is a former high-ranking Sea Org member, former friend of Mike Rinder's and Karen's and all of us, and has gone back into Scientology.
Yeah, I came out. I really have to thank Mike Rinder, who held my hand, because I was in such a black cloud.
Right.
I was so disaffected, but I didn't have the guts to just come out and lose Alexander.
Right.
So I was in this no man's land of
wanting to do the right thing.
Yeah. And yet I couldn't.
Right.
I
totally
felt
understand.
Till finally I did it. But I would call, we would talk 1 hour at a time. Mike answered all my questions as to why they so brutalized me at INT base.
And
Mike
was
enormous help to me.
Well, Karen, let's go back for 1 second because you just mentioned something. What were the circumstances of which you did leave the Sea Org after so long? Why did you leave?
I had two very, very bad torturous incidents in the Sea Org. And I just couldn't get over it. This is not what I signed up for.
Well, what happened?
One was, I was a class 12 CS with statistics out the roof, and I was bucking against the system on taking really demented illegal PCs.
But meaning, because meaning of the
PCs who are suicidal. PCs
No, but people don't know what PCs are. So.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, public wanted Scientology services.
Yes.
And as long as they had gobs of money, they were hurled into this class we talk about. They were hurled into a certain area. And I was solely responsible to see that they would win with Scientology procedures.
Right. And you felt that these people that people were that Scientology was allowing in was against the policies that you knew from L. Ron Hubbard, that these people should not be accepted into Scientology.
Not just that. We were the wrong forum. They did need to go into some institution or so on. I mean, they were threatening, for example, to throw themselves off the balcony outside the Crystal Ballroom.
Oh, so you're saying they needed
this amount.
Oh, so you're saying they needed real help, not Scientology.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
They needed.
And what's so crazy, this is what's so funny, Mike. Here she is, a dedicated Scientologist, the top of the training chart for Scientology, like one of the lead, she would be considered a lead therapist, a lead psychologist, the head of departments, right?
Right.
And she's saying, we can't help these people.
Right.
We shouldn't. And, they need real help.
And of course, they had money, as Karen said. So you can't send them anywhere else. They've still got money to be milked.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a horrendous dilemma.
Right.
And I'm going to save Karen the pain of having to go through the other experience because I am very familiar with that. She was brought to the international base at Golden Era Productions and put onto what is called heavy manual labor. And the reason for this, David Miscavige did not like Karen. David Miscavige sought to persuade Heber to divorce Karen.
Why?
Because he thought she was too much of a loudmouth. She wasn't good for his, Heber staying on the program and being with the team, and that she was a bad influence on Heber.
I see.
I mean, he was exactly right. If you take bad influence being think for yourself and have a sort of a perspective on things that isn't just the Scientology perspective, but
that
resulted.
She was trouble.
She was a trouble source.
Yeah,
and in the mind of David Miscavige, a trouble source like that has to be dealt with. So she was brought to Golden Era Productions and basically turned into slave labor without any, and the horrible thing about it, and what Karen and I talked about for so long that she refers to, is that she had no idea what she had done wrong or why she was there. She was just being punished for the sake of punishing and breaking her, and she didn't know what she had to do to ever figure out, how do I get back to being just a normal person again?
That
happens to a lot of people in Scientology in the C organization, particularly those who come close to the orbit of David Miscavige. And Karen was because Heber was.
Gotcha.
And that was the end of the road for Karen in the C Org. Absolutely. I heard on numerous occasions David Miscavige say, Karen is not good for Heber. I was Heber's boss at the time. And I heard a lot of this stuff about, Heber's messed up and Heber's dude did this and Heber did that and he said the wrong thing on a TV interview. And it would always go back to, and it's because of his connection to Karen. Because Karen's a bad influence. Karen's a nut. Karen's this. Karen's that. It's like this endless stories about the reason why Heber was not performing his duties well was because he was married to Karen. And Mike Sutter of Religious Technology Center, David Miscavige's organization, and his henchman at the time was assigned to deal with Karen and basically get her to do what Scientology Sea Org members are expected to do, mm-hmm. ultimately, which is admit, it's all me, I'm bad, I've done all these terrible things, please, please, please forgive me, I'll do whatever it is that you want.
Right, so there's even fair gaming within the organization, where if somebody is speaking up or showing some independence, not getting with the program, like Karen was saying, then that's considered trouble. So then they start the campaign within the organization, meaning with you, Mike, with Heber, telling Heber, well, it's not your fault, you're incompetent, it's Karen's, and it's your wife's. And this happens all the time, Mike, in Scientology and the Sea Org. The divorce rate in Scientology has to be astronomical, because divorces happen as soon as David Miscavige says that person is not, you know, worth, because they're saying maybe they want to leave, or maybe they're saying this is not right, we shouldn't be beating people, you're out.
You're exactly right, Leah, but yeah. It's even worse than that.
Okay.
I don't know that you even know this, but at a certain point, it was determined that if someone was married to a person in a different, i.e. lower organization, mm-hmm. they had to get a divorce. Wow. So, like, Claire Headley was told to divorce Mark because Claire Headley was in Religious Technology Center with David Miscavige, and Mark Headley was in Golden Era Productions. Same facility, same same thing, but they were a different organization, so they were ordered to get a divorce.
Right.
When you get married in Scientology, there are three people in the marriage, even if you're public, not just Sea Org. Mm-hmm. There's you, your spouse, and Scientology is in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. They will get knowledge reports of even pillow talk. Mm-hmm. There's a three people in the marriage when you are in when you marry in Scientology. And that might precipitate the astronomic statistics of divorces, because there is constant third party and whispering.
Oh, yes. Well, third party to everybody at home means third party means exactly how it sounds. There's a third entity in any relationship that's talking badly about one to one and talking badly about the other, so that they're both kind of starting to hate each other secretly, and that third person remains kind of hidden, who's causing the trouble.
You know, Mike, I had a cognition. I realized something. David Miscavige was super friendly to me in earlier times. When he had these big dinner parties, when Heber's birthday, he was very cordial to me.
Well, maybe because you were compliant then, or you didn't actually show him your true personality.
I realized one thing I did that humongously pissed him off, and he doesn't forgive.
What?
When you anger him, talk about holding a grudge. I personally defended David Mayo, his arch enemy. Now, people have different time tracks with David. To me, David, from the time I arrived on the ship, he really he helped me. He was good to me. So when he was suddenly in 82 declared SP,
an enemy.
I was loud, like Mike Rinda said.
Yes.
And I said, no, David Mayo is a good guy. And this led to my removal to run around a pole 12 hours a day. Two things. One is I was blocking Wendell Reynolds and Jeannie Williamson said that I was counterintention to rising revenue by making a fuss about certain illegal PCs. And, you know, I had people come to me in my ivory tower and put their nose in my face and say, so you don't believe Hubbard technology works, huh? You don't feel you can help this person? Are you saying Hubbard technology doesn't work because someone had a meltdown.
Right.
This was
shakedown. Right.
Anyway, right. So I really proclaimed David, and I got a committee of evidence for that. And that's the point that David Miscavige could no longer, because he was super friendly. On the other hand, Mike Grinder will tell you, the flip-flopping of him.
Yes.
He schmooze you, he shows you love, and then he turns on you like a rattlesnake. That's classic David Miscavige, right?
So let's get back to 2010. You speak out for the first time?
Yes, I gave a little time track, and I gave time track of my training and my dedication and my loyalty, and then within 2 weeks or even 10 days, I got a call from my CPA, numerous calls saying the FBI were visiting with him.
So 2 weeks after you speak out, after being in Scientology for most of your life.
40 years, yeah.
Yeah. within 2 weeks, the fair gaming begins.
The fair game.
Gotcha.
This was fair game.
Okay. And what was the first thing?
It was a chilling message that was, he said that there was an anonymous phone call to the FBI that I was trafficking in underage children for sex.
Okay.
In other words, after 40 years and a senior CO technical member, I flip-flop woke up the next morning and became a human trafficker of children for underage sex.
Right. No, yep.
And the FBI were somewhat cynical, and it was an anonymous phone call. They didn't leave any... So they said, does Karen have any enemies? And he said, oh, she just came out of the Church of Scientology. And he describes a visceral... The FBI literally went backwards in their chair. There was like a... And that was the end. The case was closed. The FBI didn't even call me to get further data. It was the end of it. The FBI know about fair game. And they know what the Church of Scientology is.
Maybe they didn't back then, but so far they haven't impressed me. But go forward, Karen, in your story.
They tend to be slow. They're slow as
slow. Trails. Slow is not the word for it, Karen.
Glacial.
Oh, I like it.
Oh, very, very slow.
All joking aside. The FBI drops this child sex trafficking allegation. Then what happens, Karen?
Then someone from the city of LA shows up and says, we've had a report. We need to inspect your property. We've had a report that there is so much... hoarding here, there are dead rats all over the place, and your house could cause bubonic plague to the whole neighborhood. And even they said...
Not the bubonic plague.
Yes, plague. They said bubonic plague. And they said, you know, it. People don't usually send in reports so over the top, over the moon.
Yeah.
I'm using my language, but
sure.
So they came in, and at that time I was having different media come and interview me and use my living room and all. So it was absurd to say I had dead rats all over the place. Anyway, they apologized. They said, you know, it's just routine. We're sorry. And then I called them into my office.
Yes.
And I showed them an internet site, hate site, which said the same thing. She hasn't cleaned her home in years.
Oh, the Scientology hate website.
Hate website.
Okay.
So they saw that.
But and is this the Scientology, is this the Who is Karen?
I have plenty of hate sites, but I don't have a Who's Karen.
Is this a Freedom magazine,
yes,
Stanley type? Okay,
yes,
got you. Yes. Okay.
Well, this was pre, they hadn't even opened Stan yet.
Oh,
we're talking,
okay.
This was 10 years ago.
Gotcha.
So within hours, the next day, animal control showed up. And they said, we've had a report that you're torturing your animals.
Wow.
Again, they looked at the report. It was so extreme and so over the top. They said, we really apologize, but we need to check. So they came and saw my beloved pooches, healthy and happy, my happy birds, and so on.
Sure.
And I said, you know, yesterday, health officers came, and now animal control. And, you know, they were so cool. They said, you know what? This is wasting city official time. This is wrong.
Oh, sure.
We're going to write to every agency. I've got electronic gates. I've got super tight security. I mean, I've got
boss.
Cameras
a boss,
everywhere. I videotape everyone who
good
comes to the gate knows they're on the video, on camera. So the helpful city officials said, enough is enough. They're actually wasting city official time by sending us out. So they wrote to every single agency and CC'd me to say, if there's any further report, it's the Church of Scientology.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was the end of city officials coming.
I find it very interesting and sort of enlightening. Anybody who knows Karen knows that she is beyond an animal lover. She is an animal rescue person. She helps rescue all sorts of animals. She's known all over Los Angeles for this. This is the Scientology find what is important or what a person is seeking to protect and attack that.
Now, Mike, before you go on, because you cannot assume that people know what you're talking about, especially with your Australian accent. You know, it's so soothing, Mike, that I don't know that it gets in, because people are just like, oh, Mike Rinda. And so when you speak, you speak so nice, as opposed to me, a Brooklyn street person. Okay, so what Mike is talking about is, once again, fair game directives. And one of the directives is a policy that says, here's how you get somebody. So one, find out what the person seeks to protect. Okay, what does that mean? Oh, my reputation. So then they go out and they say, all right, well, this person, go out and say that this person loves to do weird shit with animals. And this one is a wife beater. And that one's a this, right? To try to discredit the person. Oh, wait a minute. Their family is important to them. Oh, and then it says, the third thing, I think, Mike, and tell me if I'm wrong, is the third thing is, but you could certainly, like, at the very least, you can cost them their job, right?
Yes.
So they went after all things which are minor in comparison to her son's story, right? But they went after the one thing.
They went after the thing that's most important, or the thing she is seeking to protect. That's exactly what the Hubbard policy says. You
right.
go after that which the person is seeking to protect, because that is what is important to them, and that is what will create the most impingement, intimidation, or effect on them. And when anybody who knows Karen knows how much she loves animals, so accusing her of being an animal abuser is, you know, like the worst thing that you can do.
I don't know. I mean, one would argue calling the FBI and saying that she's sex trafficking children, that's pretty egregious.
Yes, but that's also a button. You know,
yes.
That's also something that is in alignment with that idea of you accuse people of the things that they most don't want to be accused of.
Right.
The things that are so abhorrent to them that it has the greatest impact.
Yes.
You know, if someone came along and accused me of being a fan of Australian rules football, it wouldn't have any impact because... yeah, I am. Big deal.
Mm-hmm.
If someone came along and accused me of, you hate all children, I would be very offended by that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's finding and isolating these things that are what is called the buttons of people. And
right.
That's why, you know, Animal Services is showing up to Karen's place, the last place in the world that Animal Services would ever think to go.
Right. So now, Karen, it's not just these four incidents that you laid out, three or four incidents that you laid out. It is emails. It's attempting to hack you. It was you had confessed, and I don't know. I'll bring it up, even though because we've talked about this, and you said it was okay to talk about this.
Yes, of course.
Okay. They shamed you, body shamed you for an enhancement that you had gotten done after you left Scientology.
Whoa. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. This is good. I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
I don't know of any church or religion that uses your own children, your own intimate family against you.
Right.
This was, they put up, look, I felt dowdy when I left the CEO. And so I went and had a boob job. Now, yeah. I was still a good Scientologist.
Sure.
And the only person in the world that knew about it was my counselor.
Sure, your Scientology
counselor.
Because
Scientology say they handle trauma.
Sure.
Anesthesia with a boob job is trauma.
Right.
So I ran the incident in a Scientology session that I felt was the sanctity of a session.
Correct.
Well, they put up a hate website. Ha ha ha, she had a boob job. Mm-hmm. And then they got Alexander Jensch,
your son,
to call me up and say, Mom, look at this. It says you had a boob job. Imagine using your... Mike Rinder knows all about this with Taryn. My heart goes out to you on all of that, Mike. But they used Alexander Jensch, my son, and say, why did you have your breasts enhanced, Mom?
Right.
On this hate website.
Sure. Sure.
I'm telling you, Michael, if Alexander was alive, he would have done the Taryn Tosh videos. Because when you grow up in that nursery and all you know in the mindset, you even from a child onward, although you didn't buy any of that. You were a child and you wanted out and you got out, Leah. Good for you.
Well, I have a different story. I was not raised in the Sea Org, although I was in the Sea Org for a year and a Scientologist most of my life, and Scientology did raise me. I, like those of us, including you, including Mike and Jeff and everyone who's left Scientology, there was a piece of us always that remained the fighter. And that was with us, and that allowed us to fight back and leave. Which I believe, you know, there's more there who do have that. But so let's get back to this. So they fear gamed you. They called you a prostitute on your hate website. They have sent you emails. They send you emails to this day, taunting you, stalking you. And I'm talking email after email, guys. This is not like once in a while Karen gets an email. I mean, it's daily baiting. It's daily ridicule. It's daily body shaming and hate-filled vitriol and just trying to taunt her, trying to drive her insane, which is what they do to all of us. And Karen is, let me just say, a perfect example of why Mike and I especially try not to speak about ourselves. And although the fear gaming against Mike is pretty egregious and horrible, my story is not even, it's not even on the same, in the same universe as Karen's. And so that is why I choose not to, when people ask, are you being followed or whatever, I don't want to say yes. I just don't want to. In comparison, like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, I'm being followed. Yeah, they go through my guard. Yeah, they're trying to get me fired. But Jesus, when you listen to a story like this, what Karen and Jeff have put up with for years, the heartbreak that you are dealing with, that you have been left with from Scientology is just unspeakable. Your son ends up being used against you, and then your son gets sick. He gets a flu.
Walking pneumonia. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So he gets a walking pneumonia, and for which he could have taken medication for, but because he was a Scientologist, they claim to be medical doctors and treat symptoms with vitamins. But at this time, Karen, your son was disconnected from you.
Well, he had to report to Donatella, this intelligence operative.
In OSA?
At OSA. He had to report every week.
Now, OSA, OSA for everybody.
Office of Special Affairs.
Is the part of the organization of Scientology.
The darker side, yes.
Yes, go ahead.
They handle legal and public relations and
what they do, Karen, is they go after people and destroy their lives.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, yes, and legal is like a little fringe part of it, but really what they do is they just actively try to destroy people's lives. So Scientology not only now applied the heartbreak of disconnection, their disconnection policy to you and Alexander, you could not speak to your son. You could speak to your son, but your son couldn't speak to you. Meaning you were out of Scientology and would have accepted your son to be a Scientologist. But Scientology policy says if one speaks out against Scientology and what we're doing, you can't talk to them. And he was under, you know, he was listening to his primary caretaker, which is Scientology, that says you can't talk to your suppressive evil mother. And reporting to OSA, the Office of Special Affairs. And then he gets sick.
Yeah. They quickly try to send somebody far away from jurisdiction so you can't meet.
Right.
So they had bundled him off to Dallas-Fort Worth.
Okay.
And he was living in Dallas-Fort Worth so that he wasn't in proximity of me.
Okay.
And he would get these recurring fevers and Stan, who's that magician, Michael? The magician
Stan Gerson.
Stan Gerson. OT8 magician who plays at the Magic Castle.
Okay.
And heavily promotes Scientology.
Thank you. So he what? Now, what did he have to do with the story?
Alexander and him had some special friendship.
Okay.
Alexander tended to adopt older males as a pseudo-dad. He called himself the boy without a dad, because Heba was in SB Hall for years.
What
Heba
is that?
Heba was in the dungeon. Heba was imprisoned. And you can't talk to your kids when you are in the dungeon.
In the Scientology prison at Gold Base in Riverside County.
So he gets touch assist by Stan.
What
when
is
he
that?
Can't breathe. A touch assist is touching your body saying, feel my finger. Feel my finger.
So it's a Scientology quack
procedure.
Assist. Okay,
yes,
go ahead.
Uh-huh. Procedure mm-hmm. when he couldn't breathe 48 mm-hmm. hours later. So I get a call from Aaron Smith Levin, who didn't know me, who I didn't know at the time. And it's a Facebook message. And he says, Alexander is dead. I'm so sorry to tell you.
So...
And it was incredulous.
You had no idea, Karen. You had no idea. Nobody from Scientology called you, even though Heber was in the Sea Org. Heber wasn't notified that his son had passed.
You
don't know, actually. But you know that you weren't contacted by anybody.
No.
Now you're contacted by a stranger, an ex-Sea Org member, an ex-Scientologist, Aaron Smith Levin, who just as a good person thought maybe you didn't know, because he knows the procedure in Scientology that because you're considered a suppressive person, you don't matter.
Yeah. Correct.
You don't need to know if your son is sick and dying or has passed, because you, Karen, are an evil piece of shit per the Church of Scientology.
God, Leah. It's a bitter pill that I served and worked 80-hour weeks for peanuts. And I immediately call Mike Rinder to... Mm. I say, I'm trying to grasp what happened. And Mike verified, because Mike had other connections through Christie and so on. And... My universe collapsed.
Of course.
I'm very
yes.
private about my grieving.
Yes.
But I'll tell you, There's only two things I could do. I could wrap myself up in a ball in a fetal position, and I could weep and moan and carry on, or I could grieve and rise up again like a phoenix and fight them and expose them. And I chose that Alexander's death would not be in vain, that I would have a voice.
Karen, I mean, we know the story and it's still upsetting. So you go to the morgue to see or attempt to see the body of your son, and what happened?
I was banned from seeing my son.
But how is that possible?
Well, they cited that in Los Angeles, the wife has total, the wife is the kingpin. The wife, it's not the mother, it's not the parents. If the wife, well, she was in cahoots with OSA.
So Alexander married a Scientologist, and she was blocking you because she's in cahoots with OSA and Scientology, right, Karen? Where you were blocked from being able to see your son in the morning.
It's even more than that, because Jeffrey and I traced this where he was released from the morgue to a mortuary to be cremated. Yeah. But I had that window of time for 24 hours. I only wanted to give him one last kiss on his forehead or just something. And he was released down the road in Pasadena. The dead body was there. Right. And Jeffrey and I were begging the head of the mortuary to let me in for a last look at my son. There was only a wall between his dead body and me, and we called and we called and we begged the head of the funeral director. We begged, and he had been so threatened by OSA. He said he just couldn't risk losing his business.
So
he was terrified of OSA.
So yes, Scientology OSA went in and
absolutely walled me off.
And said, "You will not let this woman in, or we will destroy your business."
Well, that's what he implied. He couldn't do it. He was in terror because we wouldn't leave. We kept calling.
Of course.
I'm the mom. You know, he was born out of my womb in a painful C-section.
Of course. And you weren't even able to. Of course. And you weren't even able to perform if you wanted to. To say this is very odd circumstance. There's odd circumstances of my son's death. I want to get an autopsy done.
I had no say. OSA had. This was
to destroy your soul. I mean, to lose your son is the worst possible. Thing that could happen. It's something you never recover from. Mike, I want to ask you a question about this. How does this work in OSA that they would go so far? How can they block a mother from seeing her own son, other than what Karen described here, is that they OSA went in, Scientology operatives went in and threatened basically the guy who runs the place. I mean, but other than that, is there any legal avenue that they took to push Karen out from seeing her own son?
They figured out how to take the law that exists, which, as Karen said, is that the wife, even though Alexander was estranged from his wife at that time.
Right.
And use the authority of the wife to preclude anybody else from seeing the body. And anybody else means Karen. And it was only to preclude Karen. So, you know, they got their lawyers to find out what's the law in California, who has the
power of attorney,
and to say, if you violate this, we will now go after you. And that's why, under normal circumstances, someone like that would just say, "Of course, you're his mother. Come on in.
Right.
Of course."
Right.
But he'd been threatened. Right. He'd been threatened that if you do that, you're violating the rights of the wife, and therefore we will go after you. So that's exactly how it happens.
Okay. Karen, the ex-wife was a Scientologist, I'm assuming still is a Scientologist. She didn't work for Scientology. She was a parishioner of Scientology, right? So really didn't...
She was Celebrity Center CEO for 6 years.
Oh, she was.
And
okay.
Then she left. But all her family are very grounded. Her parents on OT7, da-da-da-da.
And what's her name?
Scientology family. Andrea. Andrea Jensch. Oh. That's
I
true.
See.
But
okay.
She had complete authority over me.
You also had mentioned there were strange circumstances of which Alexander died.
He had walking pneumonia. The coroner, we visited the coroner multiple times because we wanted, they did complete drug autopsies, drug tests and all that.
Okay.
Yeah. And they said, you know, a $20 antibiotic, if he'd been on antibiotics, his life would have been saved. But he was orphan. He had no dad. Heba was in SP Hole and couldn't talk to him.
Right.
I couldn't talk to him because I was declared a suppressive person, antisocial.
Right.
So he had no mom and he had no dad.
Right.
Now, people know that I'm affluent. I could have had a complete medical diagnosis done on him and put him on the right antibiotics.
Sure. Sure.
But he wasn't allowed to have a mom. And that's why, Leah, I feel Scientology has blood on its hands.
Sure.
And by proxy, by default, because they cut off his mom, they imprisoned his father, and he had nothing. No,
right.
No medical. He had no money for medical.
Sure.
And he died at 27 years old.
Now, Karen, it says a lot about who you are that this didn't destroy you, because I couldn't say that it wouldn't destroy me had I lost my child. It says a lot about who you are.
Thank you.
No, you deserve all the praise in the world. And people out there know who've lost children, this is a pain that would be unbearable. And some cannot deal with that pain. Understand that. I understand that as well. But like you said, you have you've fought back all of these years. You continue to fight back, both you and Jeffrey. And I thank you for telling the story. I hate to ask you, and so does Mike. We honestly hate to ask you to tell these stories to us and to the public, but we feel it's so important. But also the success of you. Of you as a person, how resilient you are. And you should look up the word resilient because it is not just the basic. You should look up the psychology definition of resiliency because it is you. It says who you, it is what you are. And you have risen. You have risen from this pain. And you have a YouTube channel, and I want you to talk about that.
Well, the YouTube channel was born out of the pain of Alexander's death. I felt I needed to show and tell a bit of his story.
Yeah.
Anyway, 6-7 years later, I have going on 11 million views, which is over 1 million views a year on that YouTube channel.
Yes.
And I've had many, many guests, ex-CEO members tell their tale. Oh boy, some of them were really fair game. We've got to do some write-ups for you with some extraordinary stories.
Yeah.
So
where could they find how could they find this? We should also put the link up, Mike, on the website to Karen's.
Yes, we will.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and to Jeffrey's blog and
of
to
course.
You know, all of these things we'll absolutely have on the fairgamepodcast.com.
Good job, Mike, because I was like, what's the website called again? Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
And I have Jeffrey, who is my absolute rock.
Yes.
I got to tell you that going through Alexander's death would have been a complete collapse. I did collapse.
Of
but
course.
Jeffrey was my tower of strength. Jeffrey and I have this wonderful relationship. I know both of you know what it is to have a partner that is so your strength.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I'm going to give Jeffrey a shout out. Mike Rinder has always been there for me throughout the years when something really frazzed me or rattled me.
Sure.
I call on Mike. Yes. And his wisdom, I don't know where he gets his...
We all do. Just, we all call Mike. We should do it. We should do a spinoff series, Karen. Call Mike.
Call I like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Better call Mike.
Better call Mike. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes, and we'll put up Jeffrey's money, the Scientology Money Project, up on the website, like Mike said, and Karen, once again, thank you to both you and Jeff for all that you
thank
do,
you.
And thank you thank for you. Continuing to speak out against Scientology and not giving up, and being the beautiful, beautiful, strong woman that you are. And we love you, and we thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Leah. You're such a gracious host.
Yeah. Wait, shut up.
All
Mike,
of
she was giving,
that goes...
Mike, shut up. She was giving me a compliment. You got a lot of them. You got a lot of them, Mike.
Leo.
And all of that goes for me too, Karen, as you yes. know. And I...
You just did it again,
everybody. I want to just add that one thing that is very important to me among my friends, and you know this, Leah, is... Yeah. The idea that a real friend is loyal,
yes.
yeah.
that you know that no matter what happens, they will always be by your side. That, yeah. to me, is the definition of a true friend. And that, to me, is Karen and Jeff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. That's Agreed. Beautifully spoken. We As are completely, usual. Utterly, you know, you have our loyalty and... We think the world of... I just don't know how that you realize how loved you are in popular culture. You are just so loved. And none of Scientology's malicious yak-yak and the Ed Parkins, it doesn't mean fiddlesticks.
Fiddlesticks.
You are loved. You have a growing audience. This podcast is going to... increase your audience. I noticed since you started the podcast on the two major sites, fans of Leah and the Aftermath, supporters of Leah and the Aftermath, the amount of people applying to join to give support has just
awesome.
Astronomically risen. So good on you.
Thank you.
Lots of
Thank
blessings
you.
To you.
Oh, well, we'll take
we
them.
Love
Thank
you.
You.
Deeply, Jeffrey,
we love you. Love you. We love you guys.
Kiss, kiss.
Bye,
Big
Karen.
Hugs.
Big Bye,
hugs.
Honey. Big Bye. Hugs. Love you both.
Love you.
Bye, honey. Damn, Mike, you still didn't let me get a compliment in. Anyway, thank you for listening. Well, you were cutting her off every time, I see.
Oh, excuse me.
And then it ended back on you with more compliments. But anyway, you deserve them, Mike. Oh, Karen, you're still on the phone. Sorry. Anyway, until next week, everyone, thank you again for listening. And like Karen said, you know, you guys have been supporting us, and it means everything to not just me and Mike, but to the people whose stories mean so much to us and the pain that they've been through. So when you support us, you're supporting them. And we are so grateful, really humbled by it. And whether this podcast is successful or not successful, we at least got to say these stories and got to put more attention on what Scientology has been doing. And for that, we are grateful. So to iHeart and everybody who's making this available, we thank you. And until next time, Mike.
What Leah said.
Love you.
See you next week.